This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be talking all things Fulham. Another win on Friday night against Swansea means that they are third in the table, one of the informed sides in the Championship. We'll be talking all things Derby. They've had so much to deal with off the field, and a certain Wayne Rooney is now in the dugout as a coach before joining as a player in January. And we'll also be talking about Luton. Their form is terrible. They lost 7-0 on the weekend against Brentford. What does the future hold for boss Graham Jones? We'll also talk about Swansea. They're in pretty poor form, not one in four games and dropping out of the top six. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us here on the Championship Fan Show, and we've got another good hour coming up for you. We're going to start off talking a bit about Fulham. Another win, as I mentioned, on Friday night. Two more goals for Alexander Mitrovic. He cannot stop scoring. So talk all things Fulham, I'm delighted to say. We are joined by Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jack. So another good win on Friday night. A tough away game away at Swansea, winning 2-1. Was the difference having a top quality striker like Mitrovic, a composure, clinical edge in the final third that Swansea simply didn't have on Friday?
I think, yeah, very much part of it. He obviously scored two crucial goals for us, and that's going to always be important in games like that. But I think equal praise must be given to Marek Rodak, who kept us in it with a string of unbelievable saves in the first half. So, you know, it's, I think, sharpness at both ends of the pitch. Yes, we were able to convert our chances, but also we had someone at the other end stopping Swansea from converting theirs. And obviously, although he was beaten eventually, he very much was a kind of pillar at the back for us. And that's something we've been lacking for kind of many a year, really. So it's good to have, you know, people scoring at one end, especially Kamara was good again, hit the bar, obviously, for Mitrovic's first one. But I think it was kind of clinicality at one end and someone to rely on at the other.
Two more goals, I mentioned then, for Alexander Mitrovic. Up to 15 goals now for the season. We've talked over the last few months, Jack, about how good it was that Fulham managed to keep hold of him, how much work there must have been done to make sure that he stayed at the club. Where do you think he would rank amongst Premier League strikers at the moment? Because there are plenty of Premier League clubs, not suggesting, not encouraging other clubs to go and sign Mitrovic in January and take him away from you, but surely he'd get into quite a lot of Premier League teams as their out-and-out first-choice centre-forward.
I think it's a funny one. Obviously, quite a lot has been made of the fact that Newcastle let him go and have struggled for goals themselves in the front department this season. But part of it is, I think, building a team around Mitrovic's strengths and also keeping him happy. You know, he's a volatile soul at points, and he showed that at Newcastle that it wasn't always easy for him. And then he struggled a little bit in front of goal. At Fulham, he seems to have found somewhere where he's wildly appreciated, even when he isn't firing on all cylinders. And it's got him into this kind of mindset of making things work for him. And we talked to him so much, you know, this year about how much he loves the club and how much he's made to feel at home here and a valued member, a leader in the dressing room. And he seems to get on very, very well with the back management as well as the players on the pitch. And I think that's all such a crucial element in how Mitrovic is performing. And to kind of drop him into another side, I've no doubt he'd score goals for almost anyone in the Premier League. But what I would suggest is that you have to kind of build it around him. And a lot of teams wouldn't be willing to do that in the way that Fulham have done.
You mentioned also there, not just at the top of the field, things going well for Fulham, but the other end, Marek Rodak, you mentioned how he is in good form. According to the ratings of all Championship players over the last month, he does get in the team of the month in the Championship. How impressive has his form been? Because last season was well documented, Fulham's problems in goal. How good has he been this season?
Absolutely. He's been fantastic and a breath of fresh air since he's come in. Obviously, we had drop points early in the season due to defensive or goalkeeping frailties, especially in that game against West Brom where Marcus Bettinelli dropped the ball. I think there's still quite a lot of love around the club for Bettinelli, but you know, Marek Rodic's come in, he's made a mistake, and Scott Parker made a big decision to make that change and bring him before the Middlesbrough game. He's come in, he's got sent off, he's got himself suspended, and then he's been brought back into the side, and he's rewarded Parker for that with such a kind of rich vein of form, and he's been so crucial for us in not conceding as many goals and really just being reliable. The other thing he's got is distribution with both feet. He's not perfect, and I don't think you'll find any goalkeeper at this level who is, but he's able to distribute with both feet, which is such a crucial element of the way that Fulham play. And it's been such a kind of breath of fresh air for, I imagine, the defence as well, to just be like, OK, he's not going to knock this one out of play. He'll find a play, he'll find a teammate. And that's been, you know, excellent in terms of the way that we build up and the way that we play.
It only felt like a matter of weeks ago, it's probably slightly longer than that, Jack, when we spoke about whether there were doubts creeping in about Scott Parker and Fulham's inconsistency. They'd win one week, then lose the next, and that's the nature of the championship this season. But after four straight wins, Fulham are up to third in the table, just 5 points off second place Leeds. I'm assuming that there is a very different outlook on the season now after these four straight wins, that Fulham are looking good as it stands, and a lot can change for a top six spot. But is the belief growing that even though West Brom and Leeds are two very good sides, that if Fulham can continue what is a very good run, they've not just been unbeaten, they've won their last four games on the trot, that they could push for a top two spot?
Absolutely, yeah. And something we said is that unbeaten runs get you to the playoff. Winning runs get you promoted automatically, and it's as simple as that. I think that these four games, one, have been really, really crucial to securing Scott Parker's, not his spot, not his job. I don't think that was ever wildly under threat, but actually his kind of status in the eyes of the fans, who are starting to get a little bit itchy in terms of the way that he set up, the substitutions he made. It was all not going kind of to plan, and now it has started going to plan. And I think that's really, really important. He needs to be praised for the things that he's done right as much as he gets criticised for the things that he's done wrong, in my opinion. So the last four games, I think, have shown us that this is a squad capable of challenging. And I think if we can continue this kind of form, I don't obviously expect us to win every game in the way that we've won the last four, but form of this kind of scale, then there's no reason we can't challenge Leeds and West Brom for those automatic spots. But, you know, there's four massive games to come now. And we've said that there have been some, not necessarily weak sides. Obviously going to Swansea and winning was a big, big thing, although they've had problems at home this season. You know, we've got four massive games, Bristol City, Brentford, Leeds, all coming up within December. I think they're the games that are going to define whether this Parker era is going to be a success or not.
You mentioned those next four games, and that's why I suppose the last four wins have been nothing short of absolutely crucial, that building form ahead of, over the next 2 weeks between the 7th and the 21st of December, at home against Bristol City, away at Preston, away at Brentford, and then at home against Leeds, that going into what's a difficult run there, absolutely paramount for Scott Parker's side, that they've gone into that run not only in good form, but in excellent form.
Absolutely, and you always want to go into these kind of runs with momentum behind you and with free scoring players like Mitrovic, obviously back in the goals again, with a defence that you feel like can be relied on. I think Alfie Mawson had a lot of questions earlier in the season with the way he backed off games, like the whole game where he sort of allowed Jared Bowen to kind of run all over him in many regards. Really did sort of raise questions about how Alfie Mawson defended, whether he was as good as we thought he was, but he's been imperious since then. And I think that's really, really important. We're going to handle a lot of attacking prowess, especially Preston at home have been phenomenal this season. I know they lost to West Brom, but whether that was justified or not is a long and another question. But it's one of those where, you know, you look at these games now, Bristol City also in that top half, and these teams are going to score goals, they're going to come at us. We have to kind of be resolute. We have to be, you know, strong, and hopefully we can carry the momentum of these last four games into this difficult run.
I wanted to get your views. We've seen how, for Chelsea, Tammy Abraham has had a very good start to the season. Obviously, he's been on loan at a number of clubs and has started the season really, really well. Currently, suffering with a bit of an injury. I know that, obviously, his brother, Timmy, is at Fulham at the moment. He joined in the summer of 2017 from Charlton. Obviously, his brother is in the headlines for the right reasons at the start of this season and is being talked about quite a lot. Obviously, made a few appearances for England in the most recent international break. Tell us a bit about Timmy. Can he follow in his brother's footsteps and make a mark in the Premier League in the coming years?
I think what you've got to remember with Timmy Abraham is that he hasn't really had any appearances outside of the youth setup. It's not like we've seen him in cup games or... And that kind of stands for something. We've seen the fact that Martel Taylor-Crossdale came in the summer, and he's already played a couple of times. He played in the League Cup against Southampton. He came on. And so there's obviously some sort of crossover there. We haven't seen any of that with Timmy Abraham yet. From what you know, I hear and what I've seen of him, he looks a very, very raw prospect. A lot like Tammy did in the early years. And I think people forget quite a lot that, you know, Tammy's spells haven't always gone as successfully as ones at Aston Villa and Bristol City did. You know, he had a very weird spell at Swansea when they were in the lower echelons of the Premier League. And I think there's quite a lot to be answered yet about Timmy Abraham. The fact that Taylor Crossdale and seemingly now Jay Stansfield, who he signed from Exeter City, has been scoring goals for fun in the youth setup, seemed to be ahead of him in the pecking order, would suggest to me that maybe he's not quite on the same level as his brother at this point in his career.
And I heard rumours that, obviously, with Ryan Sessegnon having moved to Tottenham last summer, there were some rumours that Steven Sessegnon could be joining him at Spurs. Do you think that's something that's likely to happen in January, or are Fulham confident of keeping hold of him, at least for the near future?
It's a strange one. Obviously, Steven's been injured for the last couple of games. Dennis Adoy's come in and done really well. Cyrus Christie came on against Birmingham and has done really well. And so he's kind of dropped a third in the pecking order again at Fulham. It seems really strange for Tottenham to go out and sign a player like Sessegnon, who's no longer, you know, obviously still a youth prospect and so still so exciting in terms of what he's got to offer. But I don't know what he'd be gaining at Tottenham that he's not getting at Fulham at the moment. He's obviously not going to walk into that side, even with all their right-back problems at the moment, if he can't get ahead of Cyrus Christie and Dennis Adoy in Fulham's pecking order. I'd be interested now he's back from injury to see how he gets on in terms of breaking back into this Fulham side, but I'd be very surprised if Steven Sessegnon left in January.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jack. That was Jack Collins from the Fulhamish podcast talking about what's been a great run for Scott Parker. There were some murmurings of discontent and some questions surrounding his future a couple of months ago, but four wins on the trot means that Fulham are up into third, just 5 points off Leeds, who are second. Talking a bit about Timmy, isn't it great you have two brothers called Timmy and Tammy? I'm sure the parents took a long time to decide what they were going to call their sons. I tell you what, we'll call the first one Tammy, and we'll be quite extravagant in going for a second one. We're going to call him Timmy. We're going to just change one letter and be that outlandish. Whoa, if everyone was like that, we'd all be called very, very similar names to our siblings. Talking a bit about Steven Sessegnon there, who, as I mentioned, is being rumoured to potentially be on his way to join Ryan Sessegnon at Tottenham. He made that move over the summer. But Fulham have got a tough run coming up. Home to Bristol City, away at Preston and Brentford, and then at home to Leeds before Christmas. But what you would say is if you're going to head into that run of games, head into it in form. And that's exactly what Fulham are doing. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Later in the hour, we're going to talk about Luton, who are at the other end of the spectrum in terms of their form. We're going to talk about Swansea, who are also in a bit of bad form. But up next, we'll be talking all things Derby.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's talk all things Derby now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Owen Bradley, presenter of Rams TV. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Owen. Looking back then at last weekend, a 1-1 draw at home against QPR, before we talk about, obviously, a certain Wayne Rooney being in the dugout, in terms of matters on the field, supposedly a pretty uninspiring draw. Was it quite a lacklustre game to watch?
Yeah, it wasn't the best game, certainly from an entertainment standpoint. Derby have had a few injuries mounting recently, and they lost Christian Bielik in the warm-up, which I think was a bit of a blow as well. They actually intended to play a slightly different system. They went to three at the back in anticipation of what Queen's Park Rangers were going to do, but that was abandoned after about 5 minutes because of the way QPR was set up, and Asahi Samuel was giving Scott Malone a bit of a tough time down Derby's left-hand side. So they adjusted quite quickly. And I think those two sort of disruptions to the game plan meant that Derby never really got into their stride. Martin Wackles scored a lovely free kick. QPR had some decent chances. You know, they can score goals. Keeping them out has been their issue. So I think Derby fans were probably a bit frustrated to not see Derby do a bit more going forward. But it's 8 unbeaten at home for Derby now, and I still think the signs there that they're moving in the right direction. More minutes for Morgan Whittaker as well, who's another young player who a certain Wayne Rooney's a big fan of already. So, you know, there are still positives to take from last weekend.
QPR manager Mark Warburton said that the presence of Wayne Rooney in the Derby dugout gave his side a lift, that actually in some ways it helped his side. Do you think that's kind of typical media speak, trying to find any sort of advantage, or do you think that there's a genuine reason as to why Mark Warburton would have said something like that?
No, I think it's probably very true. I always liked Mark Warburton, even when he was at Nottingham Forest. You know, big fan of his, and he's, you know, a very honest manager as well. And I think Derby, particularly once Wayne Rooney gets into the team, are going to have to deal with that in the same way that I think they had to deal with it at times last season, where you're up against Frank Lampard, so everybody's going to raise their game. I think the same thing will happen when you come up against Wayne Rooney. Everybody's going to raise their game. And Derby, unfortunately, are just going to have to deal with it. That is sort of, you know, the consequence of having someone like Wayne Rooney in and around the side. So, you know, wouldn't be at all surprised if that was a genuine thing that Mark Warburton used.
Let's talk then about Wayne Rooney. He was given a pretty good reception by the Derby fans ahead of the game at Pride Park on the weekend. He was in the dugout now. Obviously, he can be a part of the coaching staff and he's training with the squad, but he can't officially be involved in a playing capacity until January. What would you expect over these next few months, in particular when he's not allowed to actually play until the start of January? What sort of role do you think he will play? And then when he is available at the beginning of January, do you think it's a case of, because he's been training, there's a very strong likelihood that he will come straight into the starting lineup? Or is it something where he's going to, even with the career he's had, he's going to have to prove himself and going to have to work his way into the starting 11?
I mean, I think he will have to earn his place, but given, you know, the injury issues that Derby have got, it's not the biggest squad either in the first place. And the fact that he's got a couple of weeks, I guess, to sort of train well and get in the manager's thoughts and all the rest of it. So I suspect when Derby play Barnsley 2nd of January, you know, I'd be amazed if Rooney wasn't involved in the matchday squad for that one. I'm sure he'll hit the ground running in that respect. It'd be fascinating to see where he plays once he's in the side, because Philip Cocu has tried a few different formations. He's tried personnel in a few different positions. He could really play up front the number 9 role, where Chris Martin's typically played in recent weeks. Is he the number 10 role? Is he deeper in midfield? Does he play? Can he play one of the two wide positions? Of course, he did for Manchester United when Cristiano Ronaldo was the centre forward many years ago. But, you know, it's been a long time since any of that. So I couldn't tell you where he's going to play once he's in the team. And in terms of what he's offering between now and then, I think, in the same way, Mark Warburton talked about raising their game, I wouldn't be surprised if every single member of the Derby squad is raising their game in training, because, oh, the guy who's going in the drill after me, it's Wayne Rooney, England's all-time record goal scorer. So I suspect he's only gonna benefit the playing squad. And that's before, you know, he's doing his coaching bits and pieces as well. I don't think there's many better to learn from than Philip Cocker and his staff.
You mentioned there, Owen, about the squad, and maybe it's not the biggest squad that Philip Cocu has to choose from, and that would have only been dealt a blow by the fact that Graham Shinney and Mason Bennett will be out for a few months. Obviously, Mason Bennett was caught up in the controversy off the field earlier in the season. He's out with an ankle injury. Graham Shinney, who had started 7 championship games in a row before coming off with a hamstring problem against Preston the previous week. That must be a big blow for Philip Cocu to have. Obviously, Shinney, who was signed over the summer, Mason Bennett, who's a young 23-year-old forward, that they're going to be out for a sustained period of time. Will that maybe force Cocu into the market in January?
I mean, just on the two personnel, firstly, I mean, Mason Bennett, I'm absolutely good for the kid because, yes, he's had a difficult season with his involvement with what happened off the field. But for years, Mason Bennett has had this happen where he comes in the side, he looks like he's ready for a run of games and ready to make an impact, and then he gets derailed by injury. So for him to make his first start, it might have been his first start of the season, and then get hurt was absolutely devastating for him. And Graham Shinney was finally part of the first team squad. He was finally showing his worth, and then, you know, he goes down as well. Desperately disappointing for him. In terms of January, I think it'll be fascinating because, you know, I'm not sure whether Kieran Dowell might might go back to Everton. There's been some speculation about that. He's not really been playing for Derby. There's speculation that Jamie Patterson might return to Bristol City as well. Again, he's probably not played as much football as he would have liked. So you're taking two players away from the first team squad before you even think about, you know, adding any reinforcements. Derby are, though, making a big thing about the academy, and the eight teams are playing the FA Youth Cup tonight against Everton. We're doing that game on Rams TV. And there's a lot of talent in there. Some kids that have already been involved, Jason Knight, Morgan Whittaker, Louis Sibley is one that a lot of fans are very excited about. I think he'll play this evening. And the big point the club have made is they don't want to bring players in that blocks the pathway, the opportunity for those sorts of players. So I'm sure they'll do some bits of business in January. Rooney, obviously, is included in that number. But they probably won't do as much as maybe people on the outside may think they will.
You mentioned a few moments ago, Owen, about the home form, about the unbeaten run there that they're on there. And for Derby season has kind of been summed up by the difference home and away, that the defeat quite convincingly away at Fulham just continued a bad run for Derby. It's the old adage that talking about playing at home is a massive advantage, playing away is always tough, but why is it that Derby are thriving at home and on a really good run, and then it's a completely different proposition when they travel away from home?
Yeah, I mean, if I knew that, I'd probably be on the coaching staff, because it is a bit baffling. They've kept the same team from a win on the Saturday at home to a away game on the Tuesday, same formation, same setup, same approach, but for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen for them. There are specific moments, examples you can point to. I mean, I'm not sure they lose at Nottingham Forest if Jaden Bogle doesn't make a really bad error. Maybe things are different against Fulham if they don't concede an early goal, and conceding early goals has been a bit of an issue for them as well. And they'll probably point to other games and say, well, that, you know, they lost 2-0 at Hull, they could have easily won that game. They were 2-1 up at Barnsley, who aren't great, as we know, until like the final minute, and then they get a late equaliser. So you can sort of start to go through it and go, well, the performance actually wasn't that bad here, and you know, Fulham wasn't good at all. But you can sort of go through it and point to these certain moments. At this point, the worry is that it is so firmly embedded in the mindset that it makes it very difficult to come out of that. The big difference Derby have this season from last season is they don't have Harry Wilson with a bit of magic, or Mason Mount with a bit of magic. So maybe it just needs somebody. Tom Lawrence is always the name that springs to mind to me. Maybe just needs somebody to come up and do something you don't expect. And once they get that first win on the road since the end of the season, I'm sure they'll be all right. But it is, you know, certainly an issue at this point, and that's what's going to hold them back from making any assault on the top six.
And just finally then, Owen, next up for Derby away at Blackburn this Saturday. So the away beat the home that we were just talking about. But Derby season, like pretty much half of the Championship, has been dogged by inconsistency so far this season. But as it stands, there are plenty of places off the top six, but only 6 points off the top six. It just shows how Derby could win a couple of games, and they're right in the mix for promotion spots, for playoff positions. But you lose a couple of games, and that talk is completely shut down.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And like you said, not just for Derby, but for half the division. Derby have very much been win one, lose one. You put together a run of 3 or 4 wins, and you'll move right up the table. I think what a lot of Derby fans have sort of been saying in the stands for a few weeks now is, if we could just be in touch with the top six, you know, 6, 8, maybe 10 points in January, and then Rooney arrives, then maybe things will be different after Christmas. Let's just stay in the fight. Let's just, you know, stay competitive. And I think Derby will probably do that. And, you know, not to say promotion's not the priority, of course it is, but I don't think the hierarchy will be absolutely devastated if Derby don't make the top six this season, as long as they're seeing young players getting minutes, improving, and they're seeing signs of a team starting to come together. Everybody gets bored of Norwich being the example, but it's a bit like Daniel Farke did with Norwich. The season before they won promotion, they weren't great, but I remember them coming to Derby, and you could see a pattern of play, and you could see what the manager was trying to do. So I think big picture, they won't be too devastated if they can't get into the top six. But as you say, if they can put maybe 3, 4 wins together back-to-back, all of a sudden, you're in that conversation. And you know, Derby's home form surely can't continue to be this bad forever. So once that run ends, perhaps they will be in much more of a position to make a run at things.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Owen. That was Owen Bradley, presenter of Rams TV, joining us this afternoon to talk about the inconsistency. I mean, if you weren't aware of the fact that we were talking about Derby, you could have thought we were talking about 12 or 13, if not more, championship clubs. You could have inserted, oh, we're struggling with inconsistency, you win one, lose one. Well, we could have been talking about half of the championship clubs and you would have thought, oh, you're talking about them or them or them or them. And the list just keeps going on and on. And as Owen mentioned there, if Derby won three games on the trot, which is, I think, other than the top three at the moment, an utter miracle if someone can do that, you're suddenly right in the top six and you're in that talk. So it just shows how strange it is. And Wayne Rooney in the dugout for Derby at the weekend can't stop playing until the beginning of next month, but he is training and he is part of the coaching setup. Obviously signed a deal to be a player coach at Derby for the next 18 months. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. Share your views on not just Derby, but all of the 24 championship clubs. We're going to talk about two clubs in the next half an hour who are out of form at the moment. One of them will be Swansea later in the hour, but up next, we'll be talking all things Luton.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Luton now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ross Lawson, LTFC journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ross. After the 7-0 drubbing at the weekend at the hands of Brentford, Graham Jones described it as feeling quite embarrassed. I'm assuming that was a feeling that all Luton fans shared on the weekend after that drubbing at the hands of Brentford.
Yeah, pretty much. Unfortunately, it turned into one of those games that you hate to see, and you see other teams have, and you just hope that it's not your team that's a part of. We knew that the Championship was going to be tough, that we'd have tough games, but the one thing we wanted to avoid was embarrassing results, and unfortunately we've had that in a pretty severe way, and it's pretty bleak after that. It's you wonder how you get back from that. I know Graham Jones himself has had a few of those results, especially when he was at Wigan. I think they had the 9-1 at Spurs. He was part of the coaching team then, so we have to sort of look and see what we can do to get back on it, because it suddenly becomes a massive game that we've got coming up this weekend as well.
Before that game at Brentford, Luton were on a losing run. They then won against Charlton. They'd come from 1-0 down and won 2-1, so showed some character in that game. Obviously, despite the fact they'd been on a disappointing run before that, is that why Saturday came as a massive disappointment? Because they had won that game and had come from behind, so maybe signs were looking up a little bit after a tough run, and Saturday's game must have felt like, well, one step forward and then a number of steps back in the space of just a matter of days.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty perfectly there. We were feeling quite good after the Charlton game. As you said, we'd come from behind to win, and it was something that we really needed to do as well. We went in on Saturday with the same team, confident team. Brentford had just come back from a long trip at Blackburn in midweek, so they were going to be a bit more tired. There was optimism around, but yeah, very quickly unfolded. And it's kind of the culmination of all the things that have gone wrong so far this season happening in one afternoon. You know, I know we were only at 0-0 for about 5 minutes, but we looked okay for those 5 minutes. And then sort of defensive mistakes gave them for the first goal. And from there, we never really recovered. I think it was sort of the lack of fight and the lack of... you just watched the goals back and they were just so simple. I think that was one of the real problems for us, and a capitulation like that, you wonder how you come back from that. As I said, it was a team that beat Charlton. It wasn't as if there were, you know, 8 or 9 changes or something like that. So you wonder sort of what you have to do to get back and get some points and get some confidence back for the players and the fans as well.
Obviously, 7 goals won't help this statistic, but Luton have now conceded 40 goals in the Championship this season at the 19-game mark, so averaging more than 2 goals a game. As I said, that average wouldn't necessarily have been helped by losing 7-0 at the weekend. That's more than any other side in the Championship, and considering Luton aren't bottom, it's quite an alarming statistic, and I'm assuming that if Luton are going to have ambitions of staying up this season, that statistic has got to change, and it's got to change quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only consolation from the weekend was that it didn't drop us into the bottom three somehow. We've had one clean sheet all season. That was against Bristol City at home, which was a remarkably good result based on how I'd been playing around that. But that is a real worry. We had our strong defence that we had last year. We obviously lost our key fullbacks. But there's no excuse for what we're seeing this season. Perhaps our centre-backs as a pair in Sonny Bradley and Matthew Pearson, it's a big step up for them as well. Maybe we need someone else to come in alongside them, have some more experience, and they have someone with a bit more pace as well. And just keep cutting out the mistakes. I mean, from all of them so far in the back four, and of course when we had Simon Schluger in goal as well, there's been far too many mistakes in there. And against teams in the Championship, you're gonna get found out about them. And it's not just sort of conceding the goals, it's then being up against teams who, you go 1-0 down to all of these teams, you're going to really struggle to get back into the game.
I wanted to ask you about the pressure on Graham Jones as it stands. Luton are just one place and one point above the relegation zone. How much pressure do you think he's under? And obviously we can say it with the benefit of hindsight now that you just simply don't know how things are going to play out. But was he the right appointment? Because when Nathan Jones left last season to go to Stoke, Mick Harford was in caretaker charge and took Luton into the Championship. Do you think Graham Jones was the right man to appoint as the permanent manager? Or is that just far too easy a thing to say now, considering the form that Luton are in?
Yeah, I think at the time it was seen as quite a positive move. It was very similar to Nathan Jones in when he came in. He hadn't had much managerial experience, but came in sort of with drive and with hunger and was sort of said to say the right things and had a positive outlook on things. But yeah, you do sort of wonder at what point he does become under pressure, or he does become sort of touted to be leaving. I think he sort of deserves a bit more time yet, and we're very much a club that don't sack their managers. We haven't had sort of too many in subsequent years. But yeah, you do have to wonder at what point we have to say enough's enough. I don't think it's quite yet. I do think there's time for him to turn things around. Perhaps we just don't have the right quality of player, and there's only so much you can do with that. But yeah, if he's got Wigan at home this weekend, which for him is a massive game personally based on the result last weekend, his former links there. And if we have sort of a 2-3-0 loss there, then I imagine sort of strong questions will be asked as to whether he's still in the job sort of come Christmas or New Year.
I was going to ask you about that, Ross, that game coming up. It's at home against Wigan this coming Saturday. Obviously, it's very easy to say, but it really is a case of a must win for Graham Jones as much as it is for Luton. What are you looking for? Ultimately, it's a results-driven business, and Luton want to push themselves away from the relegation zone. So I would assume a win is what Luton fans are kind of just desperate for, even if it's 1-0 in the scrappiest way in the 95th minute. But are you looking, as a Luton fan, for a response, a reaction? Because last week, obviously, the players wouldn't have deliberately meant it. They didn't set out to lose 7-0, but they have their pride to pay for. They were also playing for Luton. They're playing for the club. They're playing for the fans, and that you don't, as a fan, you don't expect your team to turn up and lose 7-0. So is that what you're looking for, a response from this side to show that they do care, and that last week did hurt them, and that for themselves as well as the fans, they want to put in a sort of a performance to show that they're not just going to kind of just fall away now and crumble after a disappointing result. They're going to respond in exactly the way as fans that you want them to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a feeling that while they perhaps don't owe the fans something, that they need to go out and give something, as you said, to show how much last week hurt and how much they don't want something like that again. I don't know whether playing a team near us at the bottom is a good thing or not. It's hard to tell because there is so much pressure on that game. We lose that and we are into the bottom three. So there is a lot riding on that. And yeah, as you said, any win will do, whether it's a 95th minute scrappy game or whether we're quite comfortable. But yeah, I think there needs to be sort of a lot of fight and a lot of drive from the players and sort of a coherent game plan as well, and just sort of making sure that they give something, the manager as well, back to the fans who can hopefully see them through. The home form, as we said, is always going to be so important, and that really needs to show this weekend more than ever, I think.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ross. That was Ross Lawson, LTFC journalist. Obviously, a pretty humiliating experience for all Luton fans, losing 7-0 at Brentford last weekend. They got a big game coming up this weekend at home against Wigan. He was talking about how important it was. I think you're probably going to get Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat not singing about Any Dream Will Do, but I think Jason Donovan instead will be singing Any Win Will Do, and I think Luton fans will be pretty delighted with that. A massive game for them. Luton sat just above the relegation zone in 21st on 17 points. Their opponents, Wigan, just inside the relegation zone in 22nd, 1 point and one place behind them on 16 points. So a massive game, potentially even more so for Graham Jones. If that doesn't go well on Saturday, if Luton were to lose at home to Wigan, I think that probably would spell the end for him. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, share your view, not just on Luton, but whichever Championship club you support, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we're going to be talking about another club that's not in great form. No win in four games, and the goals drying up for a few of their forward players who were in good form at the start of the season. We'll be talking all things Swansea next.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Swansea now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Tom Coleman, sports writer at The Wells Online. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tom. Form isn't great for Swansea at the moment. The season started off fantastically, but things are dropping off a little bit, dropping out of the top six after losing at home to Fulham on Friday. We talked about Fulham actually earlier in the hour and talked about the difference between Fulham and Swansea. Is it safe to say that a lack of composure, a lack of cutting edge when those chances came was ultimately the difference between Swansea losing the game like they did and winning the game?
I think you're bang on there, Kieran. First of all, good afternoon. Very, very good to be back on the show. I think that's a pretty fair assessment, to be honest. The frustrating thing from a Swansea point of view is, I mean, I think in recent weeks, chance creation's kind of been a little bit lacking. But I actually thought at times against Fulham they were playing some of their best football of the season. But, you know, when you've got a player like Alexander Mitrovic, who can, you know, grab goals out of anything, you know, Fulham, and he's by no means the only player that Fulham have got at their disposal who can cause any team in the Championship problems. Steve Cooper himself, before that game, you know, he insisted that Fulham have got a Premier League squad available to them, and you know, when you've got that quality available to you, it's always going to give you that cutting edge. And I think we really saw that on Friday night.
Yeah, it's interesting to read some of Swansea head coach Steve Cooper's comments after the game. As you mentioned, he said, direct quotes from him, "We came up against a team who could compete in the Premier League. Certainly the investment that has gone into their squad is a Premier League budget, and we made them look ordinary on so many occasions." Will that give heart to Swansea fans that performance-wise against a good side in Fulham, they played well, or is the fact that the simple fact of the matter is Swansea took no points from the game, will that be bugging Swansea fans, especially in the form that they're in?
It'll be bugging Swansea fans, and I think a lot of them felt pretty positive coming out of that, really, because, you know, I mean, Steve is right. I mean, the investment that Fulham squad has had is light years ahead of what Swansea have had, and I think Swansea at times cope pretty well, I thought. It's just that perhaps there's still that sort of bit of an experience, sort of a lack of a sort of a strapwise edge to them at the moment. But I mean, they had that under Graham Potter too, to be honest with you. So I mean, whether fans are going to be, you know, a bit miffed about form, possibly, but you know, I think you can probably put that down to the heightened expectations that have come from, as you said earlier on, a pretty storming start to the season. But I mean, you know, there's a long way to go. Swansea are still very much in the thick of it, and I think really now the attention for many fans is going to turn to January. Cooper's already come out and said that, you know, there's probably not going to be an awful lot of money to spend. Are there going to be departures? You know, immediately you have to ask questions of the likes of Andre Ayew and Bora Baston, who the club made no secret of their desire to want to sell them in the summer, whether that's still their stance now. Officially, no, but you know, you have to say privately, if they got some good offers in for those players, you know, you suspect that they would probably at least consider it. So, you know, January is going to be a very, very interesting time for them. Previous transfer windows probably not gone very well, if we're honest. And, you know, I think that at the moment is going to be the main focus. But as you say, you know, it's a packed run of fixtures, and Swansea do need to make sure they get their form back on track, especially at home, really.
It's interesting, Tom, that you mentioned there Borja Bastón and Andre Ayew, who seemed destined to leave the Liberty Stadium in the summer. They stayed, started off the season really well, but things seem to have just kind of seeped away and the form has dipped. Is it a coincidence that their form has dipped just as Swansea's has the look at the last four games, two losses, two draws, so no win in the last four? Do you think that there's a direct correlation between the fact that some of the players up front, Borja Bastón, Andre Ayew, are falling out of form, and Swansea's form as a team is going downhill?
Probably. But then I think it would be a bit harsh to pick up on those two in particular. I think, you know, the form of the likes of Matt Grimes and George Byers at times perhaps has been a little bit iffy. And, you know, we both know that on their day they're very, very important players to Swansea, and when they're both playing at their best, Swansea usually win. But, you know, both of them have kind of both been in and out of games. I think the injuries to Joe Roden has kind of really, really hit them hard as well. And obviously, you know, there was a bit of worry about whether Mike van der Horn was going to play the Fulham game. And actually, you know, when you looked at it, the options at centre-back were quite thin there. So I think there's a lot going on in terms of trying to explain how the form has gone, how it's gone. But yeah, I think coming back to your original point, I think it's fair to say that, you know, the form of Borja and Andre Borja in particular, because, I mean, like Swansea did, he had a storming start to the season, was banging in goals for fun, and I think he was top of the scoring charts for the Championship for a little while. But obviously, you know, that form has tailed off a bit, and you know, it probably isn't a coincidence that Swansea's has too.
You mentioned there about the centre-back issues, and obviously we've talked about Joe Roden, who's out for a sustained period of time, and he was just starting to build some momentum. Interesting to read a little bit about Ben Cobango, who could have played had Mike van der Horn not made it for the Fulham game. He's a young 19-year-old that made his league debut as a substitute against Huddersfield. What type of a young player is he? What hopes do Swansea have for him? Just tell the listeners a little bit about where he's at, how close he is to breaking into the first team on a regular basis.
Well, put it this way, I've spoken to Steve Cooper quite a lot over the last few weeks, and he's a player who keeps coming up time and time and time again in conversation. Cooper really, really rates him highly. The setup there really, really rates him highly. I've got to be honest, before the Huddersfield game, I'd only seen flashes of him. I saw a little bit of him at TNS when he was on loan there, and a couple of games in the under-23s. Big lad, very composed, looks very, very confident at the back. Didn't seem to be too fazed, really, by making his league debut, even though he admitted afterwards that, you know, there probably were a few nerves kicking in there. But, you know, when you're a youngster coming into that sort of situation for the very first time, that's bound to happen, I guess. But, I mean, he is really, really highly rated, and I think there's a lot of confidence behind the scenes at the Liberty Stadium that he could be the latest in what seems to be a never-ending conveyor belt of talent at the moment.
And just finally then, Tom, looking ahead to the next game, we talked about Swansea's form not going in the right direction. Well, it's not exactly going to get a lot easier on Sunday. They make the trip to the Midlands, to the Hawthorns, to take on table toppers West Brom. I'm assuming that there's a little bit of trepidation that if Swansea were in good form like they were a month ago, then there may not be the same nervousness going into this game. But considering the form that Swansea are in and the form that West Brom are in, they're just winning game after game after game. This is a game that Steve Cooper might be a little bit nervous about.
I don't think Steve Cooper really takes any game for granted, to be honest. I think he'll be well aware of the task ahead of him, but he's well aware of the task ahead of him in every Championship game. I mean, the thing that he always stresses is that, you know, nothing is ever guaranteed in this league. I mean, I think, you know, I remember when Stoke City came to town. Stoke, you know, I think they were rock bottom of the Championship at the time, and, you know, everyone sort of more or less expected Swansea to walk over them and get 3 points, and obviously, as we all know, it didn't turn out like that. So, you know, I don't think I don't know whether he'll be nervous, but as I said, you know, he'll be very, very aware of the task ahead of them. But I mean, to be honest, the thing you can say about Swansea is that on the road they've been very, very good. They've probably got the best away record in the whole of the EFL. So you know, that's certainly something to cling on to. But as you say, West Brom are in great form too. So, I mean, it could be a very, very fascinating game to watch.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tom. That was Tom Coleman, sports writer at Wales Online, and the form isn't great. I mean, it was surprising, actually, how well they started, considering Graham Potter was snared by Brighton over the summer. Steve Cooper came from the England age group set up and had come in and he hit the ground running, and the likes of Borja Bastón and Andre Ayew that seemed destined to leave the Liberty Stadium, suddenly they were contributing. They've gone off the boil. They've hardly scored, hardly got any assists in the last month or so. And Swansea face a tough game. It's at the highest stadium in England, actually, in West Brom. So a tough game against the table toppers for Swansea.
This is Love Sport.